The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are not necessarily representative of the Coalition or of any other entity. This content is intended for mature audiences only.
What is going on, people? Welcome to a very special edition of Throwdown. So this one is kind of a debate, a continuation of the Nintendo Switch debate, but this time we have a special guest joining us. We're gonna have Chris going up against my friend Will Greenwald from PC Mag and Geek.com. Will, how are you, man?
I'm doing good. Yeah, that's it.
All right. You know, since you're a first timer here, we need to ask you the question. You know, we gotta vet you, right? What is your gaming origin story? How did you get into games? What was your first game, your first console, all that?
Okay. I've been gaming all my life. I started with the NES when I was a kid, although before that, I suppose I was started with, like, you know, Lode Runner and Carmen Sandiego on my dad's Apple IIc. And since then, I've just been deep into games. I've been a tech journalist for about 12 years. I currently work at PC Mag, and I write for Geek.com. And I have written for freelanced in the past for things like Tested and GamePro, and I've worked for CNET, and, you know, I've just done a whole lot of stuff over the last decade or so, including covering several E3s, you know, I think three generations of system launches, and I've, you know, owned most of them.
Sweet. All right. What was the first game you remember playing?
Probably Super Mario Brothers 1, although I have more memories of playing Mario 3.
Ah, yes. That's the better one, by the way. Just throwing that out there. By the way, just a quick story. First time I met Will, it was at a screening for Batman versus Superman, and him and I had the same face. Like, oh my God, what did we just watch?
Yeah, that face was nothing compared to Tim's face. Like, I was sitting next to him. And...
poor Tim.
All right, man. So scarred him.
Oh, that was bad. Yeah, everybody in this room hates that movie equally. Terrible movie. Anyway, but we're not here to talk about that crap. We're here to debate some of the tenets of the Nintendo Switch. You guys, you know, you and Chris specifically have been kind of going at it on Twitter for maybe 2 months now. And, you know, we're like, how about we just debate this on, like, you know, on camera, whatever, voices, instead of just 140 characters. And hopefully we could come to some kind of accord here, you know? So, Will, I'm going to start off with you, man. We're going to kind of ditch the format of versus. We're going to do a little bit more freeform. So we'll start off with you. What are some of the... What is the first main thing you want to bring up in this conversation? And then, Chris, you know, you jump in as you feel, as you see fit.
Well, the first thing that comes to mind is because you put up your video earlier today about is the Switch a portable system or a handheld? And I see what you're saying. I just totally disagree with that. And the Switch, the fact that it's a weird thing means that we can't really have a normal line with this because... however you want to describe it, however, whatever label you want to put on it, the fact is it is a game system that I can hold in my hands. Hold on. Am I getting some feedback in your audio?
No, you sound fine, man. You hear anything?
That's weird. I'm getting some feedback.
Oh, actually, yeah. I do hear a little echo. I knew what you're talking about.
Okay. Let me just try to adjust that. There's a button on here. Okay. Basically, it doesn't matter whether you want to categorize it as a handheld game system or a home console. And it doesn't even matter how Nintendo categorizes it because, well, the Wii U has proven that we can't really understand how they're going to categorize anything that they put out. The fact is, this is a system that I've been playing a lot on the subway and, like, from my desk and just, you know, sitting on the couch, not looking at the TV, looking at this thing in my hand. It is a portable system. It's not just a portable system, but it is this device that you can use just like a 3DS, just like a DS, just like a Game Boy, just like a Vita. And like saying it's not a handheld is wrong. I don't know. I think we should build on the discussion from here.
Okay, yeah, Chris, go ahead, man.
Well, you know, being in Nintendo marketing for 5 years, you get to learn a little something about the language they use and the reason they say things the way they say them. And how, other than the debacle that was the introduction of the Wii U, they are very careful and very cautious about how they use language and how they refer to things. I know this because I worked on multiple sites, and all the language had to get vetted, not just by legal, but by all the higher-ups. Even Reggie had to sign off on updates to the web. So when they say things like, it's a home console you take on the go, it's not just a marketing thing to say that this is not the 3DS because we still want the 3DS to sell. This is how they view it in terms of what this thing is, because this they had to be very strategic this time about how they position the Switch. They couldn't have market confusion like they had with the Wii U. They were absolutely trying to avoid that. So when they use this language, and this is why I look at this stuff, they have to be very careful about it, and they choose their words very carefully. They didn't use the word system because system is the ambiguous way that it could be either. It could be anything. They specifically use the word console. If they just said this is a home system that you could take on the go, then it would be a different story, and I really wouldn't have a leg to stand on. But they don't refer to it like that. They don't refer to it like that on its homepage. They don't refer to that like that on any documentation or their financial reports. Their language is consistent in all of those things. And in financial reports, they don't have to use marketing language or flowery terms or anything like that. And they still repeat that same phrase. So this is why what they say in terms of the system has weight. Now, Tony made a great point today in his video. One of the major things that he pointed out was that the Switch does not work by itself, and a handheld system, even a mobile phone or anything, doesn't need accessories to operate. So the definition of a handheld is something, right? Before, it was something you could hold in the palm of your hands, which was probably in the days when Palm Pilots existed and stuff. So I'm not looking at that, but in terms of a system, it needs to stand by itself. It needs no accessories to operate. It just takes games or whatever. So everything from the Game Boy on up needed nothing to be playable. The Switch needs Joy-Cons to be playable. The Switch by itself is unplayable. It is as unplayable as if I pulled out the PS4 and took it outside and, I don't know, twirled it around. It's not going to do anything. And it needs something. Now, the PS4 needs way more than the Switch, but it still needs something. So if I just took the tablet part of the Switch, which is the core of the system, and went outside, it wouldn't work. And the Joy-Cons are not fused to it. It's not one unit. They're accessories. They can be swapped out. They can be changed. You can buy new ones. You can buy colorful ones. And maybe down the road, they'll make different ones, or something. But other than that, they are accessories, just like the Pro Controller and the dock and everything else they plan to bring out in between. It's an accessory. So the fact that it needs these things weighs it more on the side of it being a console than a handheld, because it is not encapsulated in one unit that is capable of standing on its own for use outside.
I think it'd have more of a point if there was any version of the Switch that came without the Joy-Cons. If there was a version of the Switch that came with just the Pro Controller, you might have a point. But the fact is that in the box, there is a setup so you can hold this thing in your hands and play it anywhere. And yes, the controllers are removable. The Joy-Cons can do that. That's part of the premise of it. But it doesn't change the fact that the system is fundamentally portable. And you're going back to your time in Nintendo marketing. I've been covering Nintendo products for a long time, too. I mean, I was there for the Wii launch. And I totally believe that this is a sort of consistent message that both marketing and financial has done with Nintendo. I'm just not saying that what Nintendo is doing is something we need to really think is going to be the hard, fast truth from now through the system, that it was necessarily the truth when the system was conceived, and that's going to be the truth next year. This is how they're framing the Switch now.
How they frame the Switch now is very important, because it has to be consistent. They cannot just change.
It really doesn't.
It absolutely does, because they're still coming off the Wii U and its poor introduction and the market confusion that happened up to a year and a half after the Wii U launch. People were still confused over the relationship of the gamepad and whether there was a console or not.
So, yeah, and they've been doing a lot better for the Switch. But right now, what they're trying to limit confusion from is with the 2DS and 3DS, because those are still going to be SKUs for the next year or so. Now, the 3DS system lineup, the upcoming stuff, is pretty much... I would say it's looking kind of like end of life cycle, but it's still stuff they want to sell. And they're still putting out this new Nintendo 2DS XL, which is a horrible name. But again, that new convention is part of Nintendo doing something consistent but weird. And it's this thing where they don't want the Switch to take away from sales of portable device, of portable devices that have been in the market and are still incredibly popular. Because they still have software coming out for it. They still have hardware coming out for it. So right now, they're saying, yeah, this is a home console that you can take on the go. But once the 3DS and the 2DS dies down a little bit, maybe after holiday season of this year, then they're going to start showing it as, hey, this is a portable thing. You can take it anywhere. The 2DS is dead. What 2DS? Shut up. And it's going to be, now that's the thing. Switch all the way. Maybe. Because again, this is Nintendo. We don't know what weird shit they're going to pull.
Yeah, well, I expected, I even said this before the Switch came out, that I expected to put all their eggs in one basket. I mean, they cut off the Wii U's head before the end of last year, and eventually the 3DS will meet the same fate, and they'll want to integrate everybody into a single unit, which is the Switch. But in terms of what defines a gaming handheld, and in looking at Nintendo, looking at their past, because they set the bar for handhelds. I mean, look at all the handhelds that have come out since the 80s onward. I mean, Game Gear demolished, Atari Lynx demolished, TurboGrafx Express gone. You know, they just, everyone has been knocked down, you know, and they've reigned supreme either because, and they said the first of the Game Boy killed the Game Gear on battery life alone. The Game Gear was pathetic. And I had a Game Gear also, and it would, you know, I had this huge thing strapped to my hip just to power it for like 5 hours. You know, if I put six AA batteries in it, it only lasted 2.5 hours. This is terrible. You know, and so with that, so they set the bar on battery life. They set the bar on durability. You know, you can drop a Game Boy. I've dropped the Game Boy. I've dropped the GBA, whatever. The clamshell made it even more durable.
But what does that have to do with whether the Switch is portable?
Because I'm making a point about how the handhelds are defined in terms of gaming handhelds and the bar they set for what a handheld is. So with the durability, I mean, you know, they every system, GBA, whatever, it can take drops. You know, I've dropped my 3DS, you know, accidentally, whatever. I even dropped it in the subway, pick it up, and it works. Maybe it's a little scuffed, but, you know, it's for the most part fine. But the Switch doesn't have that luxury. I mean, if, you know, I watched...
I've dropped my Switch once or twice, and it's been fine, too. And I had a 2DS Lite. I had a DS Lite, and that was infamous for a design problem where the hinge would crack. I think going to... ruggedness or durability, yes, Nintendo has a rep, but that's been across the board. That has nothing to do with whether something is portable.
Well, I mean,
I have said that the Switch is not a portable device. They show people taking it on the go.
Yeah, but that's not, you know, they also show people playing with it in their living rooms. And the one thing you can't do with any handheld, and I would like to see someone try this, is to take your 3DS and hook it up to your television. And then take an accessory controller and attempt to play it.
The PSP absolutely had that.
The PlayStation television had that. Nintendo
no, the
has
PSP
not
before that actually had an AV connector.
Yeah, and so and you could take a controller and connect it to it?
No, you held, I think you might have. I forget, yeah. But the point is you could plug that into your TV. It was the same concept. It's a line no, you're trying that, to draw that there's no reason for the line to be there.
No, it's not the same concept, Will, because, again, the PSP is one unit. When you plug it out of your TV, and it's not meant to play on a TV, they just gave you an accessory that could play on a TV. The PSP was not advertised like that. The PSP is just a handheld system, and it doesn't have accessories. It doesn't need anything in order to play games.
Wait, so you're saying the Joy-Cons are accessories?
Yes, they absolutely are.
So
is
the Nintendo Switch dock also an accessory? Because those also come in the box.
Yeah, it's included, but they're accessories, and that language has been used. Kimishima exactly called those accessories, and that's not marketing language.
How's the Switch dock different from the PSP connector? It's an accessory that lets you plug it in.
Well, you just used the term accessory, but
the PSP accessory.
Yeah, did the PSP come with this cable?
No.
No. Well, there you go. That's one huge difference. And honestly, I have had PSP for years.
Does it come with Joy-Cons that literally click to the sides and you hold and make it into a portable device?
Right, but it needs these things to become a portable device. It cannot operate on its own without them. And that's my point.
You also can't do anything without the dock. Now, if you have the dock and a Pro Controller, sure. Pro Controller doesn't come with it. If you're talking about what comes in the box, you have to talk about both the dock and the Joy-Cons. And that's what makes the Switch a weird thing that is hard for us to say it's not a portable device or it's not a home console. It could just be both. And the fact is, however you want to label it, it's this thing I can take anywhere and play with.
Well,
it's portable fundamentally.
Yes, it's portable fundamentally, and it is unique because it does things that, you know, handhelds can't do, because I can't put a 3DS down on the table and share it with a buddy and have controllers and play a two-player game. It doesn't do that. Like, nothing does that. And maybe a tablet could emulate that with some, I don't know, weird configuration, but for the most part, I've never heard of it. But in its essence, in its messaging, and this is consistent across all of their messaging, including financials, that this is a console that you can take on the go. And it's absolutely portable. I agree with you on that. But you have to realize there's a difference between a console and a handheld in terms of capabilities. The Switch is a way more capable system than the 3DS by far. But it is not to be looked at as just simply a handheld, because a simple handheld cannot give you any type of upscaling or anything when connected to a TV, and they don't come with accessories to do that. The 3DS comes with nothing to connect to a television, and I don't know of a way to do it without some custom hardware that probably costs more than the 3DS itself.
I didn't say that it was just a handheld. I just said it is a handheld. It can be more than one thing. That's the whole point of the Switch. It's called the Switch because it switches between these two things.
Right, but but the language is very careful, and I don't agree with you that you can just ignore what Nintendo says, because if you can ignore what Nintendo says, then any time that they make a statement about sales or record number of sales or putting Switches on a plane or whatever should also not be considered.
You mean like we're not phasing out the Wii U, or that we're going to continue supporting the NES Classic, or that there's no problem with Amiibo supplies? Again, I've been covering Nintendo and all games and a lot of consumer electronics as a journalist for about a decade. And yes, you should listen to what companies say, but you should also take it with a grain of salt and not assume that what they're saying to you right now is what is the absolute case, period.
Yeah,
you know, absolutely, the financials and the marketing is saying this is a home console primarily, because they're phasing out the Wii U hard, and they're still selling DS line products. So they still want to sell those, so they don't want to say, yeah, this is replacing the 3DS, because then they're taking money off the table for people who still want to buy the new 2DS XL, the upcoming 3DS and 2DS games. They want to keep that going so people still buy it.
Yeah,
they're saying this stuff so they make money.
Well, you know,
I'm not judging it, but that's just what they're doing. That's why they're saying the Switch is what it is now.
Yeah, well, I realize that, but the Switch will always be that even after the 3DS is gone. After they remove it from the equation and the Switch is their entire ecosystem, their messaging will not change. And I can almost guarantee that. Listen, I understand you've been covering stuff for a long time, but I also work with them. And I've also had seminars and marketing meetings with Reggie himself, where he's talked to us about all this stuff. He talked to us about how we were going to marginalize the PSP. He discussed how we strategize messaging and all this stuff. So I have a different perspective than you do. And from this perspective, their messaging always has to be consistent. They cannot just adjust their messaging. And the Switch is, while it's versatile, it's not a chameleon. And it has to have a solid message of what it is. And has to be consistent, because that message has to resonate through a worldwide market.
Yeah, that's how marketing language works. But it doesn't change what it actually physically is and does, or how people use it.
Well, if
I say talking about this however they want, and this is totally their strategy. But the fact is, it is a device that you can plug in and use at home, or you can take anywhere. And however we name it, doesn't change that you can use it in those two different ways. And that's what really makes it appealing and highly sought after.
Well, then we're going in circles, because Tony plays his strictly as a console. So from his perspective, it's not a handheld. And from your perspective, it is. So if we're only going to look at it at that point, then it's, you know, then, you know, it's both and neither and the hybrid and, you know, and, you know, I see your point, but you also have to see my point that it can be played 100% of the time without ever removing it from the dock and without ever taking it anywhere, and that it needs accessories to be playable portably.
It totally can, but you should also see that how I play it, I almost never turn it on when it's docked in my TV. Sometimes when it's at work, we dock it and we can play stuff on it, but mostly I play it in my hands. It's multiple user case scenarios, and that's what makes it really interesting as a device. And however we want to label it doesn't change that. I mean, I'm totally okay with you calling the device a home console, but saying it's not a portable.
No, I didn't say really it's not a portable. That's not the language I use. I said it, I did say it wasn't a handheld because here's why. When
what's the difference between them?
Well, hold on. When Brett and I were discussing this on the last throwdown, the reason he's calling it a handheld is to just compare it to the Vita, which is a 6-year-old and legacy system, right? You cannot compare, you know, the a current gen console to a last gen handheld. And this is the problem. This is where the semantics comes in, because if you refer to it that then the bar for the Switch is how does it compare to only handhelds and not other systems? And that's where I say that language is important, because semantically it is a console. You have to compare it to the level of the field it's playing on, and it's positioned right now compared against PS4 and Xbox One, and those are consoles.
And that's totally compared like important. That. At no point have I compared it to the Vita, except when I said, wow, this is way better than the Vita.
No, I'm not saying you did that. I didn't say you did that. Brett was doing that, and that's why we had that debate on Thursday.
Oh, I know. I'm just saying that's why I'm calling this a portable in addition to home console. It can be both for different reasons from Brett. So maybe the points you were trying to make with that just don't really apply to what I'm saying about it. But regardless of that, I think we can just agree, okay, you can use it in these ways. And however we label it, how much stock you want to put into marketing terminology, how consistent they will be, financial terminology, none of that changes what it technically does. So maybe we can just agree on a detente and move on to another subject.
Yeah, I'll go with that. That was actually pretty good. You guys made some good points there. Since I let you go first, Chris, what's a point that you wanted to bring up with Will based on the conversations you guys have been having on Twitter?
Well, I'll just say that I kind of got heated, so I would like to apologize to Will. Basically, the first time with Mario Kart, this time, I felt like I was being dragged into conversations that I had nothing to do with. And then, you know, felt kind of slighted because, like, you know, I'm being told that my research doesn't matter and the work I do for this show, which but I don't get compensated for, is meaningless. So, you know, I started to take that personally, and you know, I kind of came back as harsh. So I'm going to be the first to apologize for that. And I'll just say this. What I do on here is try to bring the truth and to everyone. My obligation to everyone, ever since I left the video game industry and I was able to do this show, was to be able to look into things beyond the surface and show you that the health and status of the company. Now, because I came from Nintendo, and I always say, like, it's the best job I ever had, is it was a great experience, had a great team, great people, great experience, and all that stuff, right? It's looking at the health of a company, it requires you to do more than look at one product. It requires you to look at multiple variables, and one of the most important lifebloods of a company is their revenue, and that's what I look at. And I look at and I disseminate it. I read it directly from reports. I make charts and graphs based off of it. I find ship numbers and I put those out there. I'm not making anything up. And my obligation is to, you know, tell people what that means or translate sometimes, because like things like extraordinary income, nobody's going to understand. you know, where you have to give it context. So that's what I try to do here. And I work very hard on bringing that every week and putting myself out here. Despite what people think, and I've been, you know, assailed multiple times on Twitter and social media and whatever, YouTube comments, because people hate that when I say that. And then they conflate it with that I hate the company, which I don't. What I would like Nintendo to do is do better by people. And I think they can, but they have to undo some very deep cultural things. And I don't see them doing that. I haven't seen them change. And so, frankly, this is why I say the things I do and make the predictions I do. And I've been pretty accurate in my predictions. You know, I called out the ending of the Wii U. I told people in 2015, I wrote a whole article of, and I mentioned what the NX was going to be. That was without even being there when it started. And I knew what direction they were going to move in. And I turned out to be right. I made predictions before the Switch launch, and for the most part, they were correct. You know, when Emily Rogers told the entire industry that Zelda was going to be delayed and everybody ran with it and it wasn't going to launch with the Switch, I didn't buy it because the reason was ridiculous that somehow they had localization problems. I'm like, this is not the first game that Nintendo's ever localized. This is a 30-plus year history. There's no way they had scheduling problems like that. And sure enough, it launched with it. So where I'm coming from, a track record experience and stuff, I do expect, like, at least from people, and I don't really get it, is just a little bit of respect for the work I have to put into this.
Okay. First off, thank you. I appreciate the apology. And I do admit I come off as sort of a dick, and I did, you know, say insulting things. So I apologize for that. And I am not discounting the use of statistics in what talking about video games. I think there is a lot of value to be had for that. And interpreting, you know, financials is something really useful. The only issue is when it starts to bleed over into analysis of game reviews and the implication that statistical trends extrapolate onto things that are fundamentally subjective, which is game criticism. And even then, the problem is simply when you are pointing at numbers and turning it into and applying arbitrary criteria to those numbers. You're using the numbers truthfully, but you're not necessarily using them in the right way, because with reviews, these are things people can just completely disagree with, and that's totally fair. I can disagree with Tony on what scores can be, but then to say that, no, it's weird that, say, this game, of course, we're, you know, going back to Mario Kart 8, saying it's weird that this is so many points above the average when it's an aberration, that only works when you're applying set criteria that are completely arbitrary, even if you're applying it to hard numbers. Now, using numbers to analyze the future of a company, how their financials are doing, how effective their marketing is, that is totally valid. But once you start to try to apply that to reviews, that becomes a fundamental issue, not only because you're dealing with subjective things, but because the implication that comes with it undermines the professionalism of the reviewer.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. When I'm talking about those averages, I was talking about everyone. I wasn't singling you out for doing anything shady. You know, I'm saying, like, when I see that stuff, it seems odd to me. Now, I realize every game is reviewed by a different person, and different people have different emotions on different days. I know one guy at X Publication could stub his toe that morning and play Mario Kart and hate it because he's mad at the world, and then give it a bad score. And one guy could, you know, he won the lottery in the morning and he's like 10 out of 10 and I quit. You know, so of course it's arbitrary, but even with subjective things, there are patterns that can be looked at and followed. So when I looked at, a one hop port of a game, and I saw that Mario Kart seemed to be swinging farther than anything else I'd ever seen, that's when I questioned it. Now, am I right about it? Well, maybe I'm not. Maybe I'm just a guy who's looking at things too critically. But I, from my perspective, I thought it was odd.
Yeah, but the fact that that's a question means that even if you're applying hard numbers to it, you're still applying subjective logic. And Yes, you can look at a whole bunch of different HD remake ports, but nailing all the details down, the difference between the ports and the original games, and having them extrapolate perfectly onto the things that changed with Mario Kart 8 Deluxe for Mario Kart 8, that's a pretty arbitrary, weird thing to nail down. And it's totally cool to say, I don't think this game's good. Tony was very much right when he noticed that it doesn't convey certain control things. It basically assumes that you know Mario Kart already, that you're going to just dive into it, that you don't need a lot of instructions. And it makes certain features very opaque that people need to fill out and discuss. They can't really just like learn it through tutorials. Those are valid complaints. And that might affect, say, him giving the game a 7 in review versus me giving it a 9. Because I didn't prioritize those things as high, I didn't notice it as much of a problem. But the issue is still the addition of content and the issue of changing things to such a significant extent. You can't really extrapolate that just based on a category, because you're not going to nail those factors down unless you're looking at just one game. You're not going to have this is an entire genre of HD remake, because what changes a whole lot between different games. Like compare the Sly Cooper collection to the Silent Hill collection. And one's a complete screw up. One's a pretty good collection.
Yeah, Silent Hill is pretty bad. But I can see I see your point. So I'll concede that was a path I was going down that I was trying hard to support, but on reflection, I've lobbied for getting rid of review scores in general, because I think they've become too arbitrary. I mean, the other day I got my copy of Yooka-Laylee and I enjoyed it. I played it and I can understand like people feel differently, but I expected it to be Banjo-Kazooie, just it will look way prettier, and that's exactly what it is. But even with all his problems, I kind of expected that. And then, I watched Jim Sterling's review and he slammed it. He gives it a 2 out of 10, which to me is like, the game isn't broken. I don't know why he's so mad at it, but, and I disagree with it. But again, yes, it's very subjective. So I can agree with that.
Cool.
I need to just quickly jump in, because just to shout out everything according to me, he goes, he's very happy to see this debate. He's like, he's never seen people on YouTube debate civilly before. He's like a shock right now.
Hey. This isn't Warzone.
Hey, dude.
Yeah. Okay. So, Will, was there another thing you wanted to discuss here tonight?
I'm pretty open to a lot of stuff. We could totally have a discussion of whether or not games should have scores. We could totally talk.
That's
about
a subject for another topic.
Things that we could discuss to great extent. But specifically, I'm open if there are suggestions.
All right. I know you don't really want to go down this route, but I'm going to do it anyway, because I think it's still a good topic. Do you think the Switch, could potentially be, more of a success than the Wii U? We know what happened with the Wii U, marketed terribly. It did shit. Do you think that the Switch is poised to be a success, or will it fail? Because Chris is kind of saying if things are going the way they're going now, this thing may not be around, even next year. So what do you think about that, Will?
I personally hate speculating like this, because I am a product reviewer, a critic. I, look at how products work and whether they're good. I mean, I really liked the Vita. I can't say that was a success at all. I really liked the Wii U. That wasn't a success. I don't like to put any personal, eggs in financial success basket. I just like devices that work and fulfill my needs. But the Switch is almost certainly already more successful than the Wii U. Like, it's on path to do that. And if Nintendo makes more good decisions than completely baffling Nintendo decisions that just hamstrings them in ways that other companies don't even consider doing, yeah, it could totally just be, it could keep selling really well.
Oh, okay. Well, and when I originally predicted it, I was a little less enthusiastic. I inflated my projection of what I thought it might sell by the next fiscal year based on their performance and what they reported for this fiscal year. And I initially said like maybe 5, and then I pushed up to 7. Macquarie says now 14, and everybody's all over the place. Michael Patrick says 16. you know, and they make way more than I do to figure that out. But the reason I, you know, I said that initially is because I was, the one main thing that is paramount to everything else besides, you know, the feature set and the system is the games that come with it. So Nintendo has like probably the most sought after, you know, first party IPs ever. And it's important that they support their system more than, you know, third parties. Like, it's not up to EA to give them momentum. And I don't think many, you know, Nintendo loyalists or players care for Call of Duty or Madden or you know, even FIFA. So, and I'm just saying that, you know, Richard, just based on, if you look at the multi-plat sales for those and you go back to the Wii and before 2013, the Wii U, just like how they sold. And now the Wii U was less in the market, so obviously you have less people to sell to, but they generally don't sell well because people who play on Nintendo are looking forward to Mario, Zelda, Metroid, you know, Donkey Kong, and they want to play those things. They want to enjoy those things, and you know, they have a long history. So when I looked at it, when I watched the presentation and, you know, I just looked at 1-2 Switch and I thought this is kind of a joke. And I said, the only thing that they have here that's amazing is Zelda. And then they saved it for the end and they showed it. And I actually got to play it at E3 and I thought it was great. I sang its praises then. So, but I didn't see, you know, anything else. And they pulled out a sheet with a bunch of labels that, you know, that picture they showed that they had all this third party support, which I pointed out a third of them were frameworks and not actually games or publishers.
Yeah.
You know, so that was troubling. And then, you know, the fact that there was no confirmed things, and then publishers started coming out after the Switch presentation and immediately saying, this is not coming to the Switch. It was EA came out because they were getting hounded by fans, and they said, we're not bringing Mass Effect. And then Sega came out because they came out and said Sonic Mania is coming, and everybody asked them about Yakuza 0, and they said, no, Yakuza 0 is not coming to the Switch. And Atlus came out and said, no, Persona 5 is not coming to the Switch. So there was a lot of these things aren't coming, more than I heard of, you know, these are coming. You know, there was little titles that look good, like that little racing game that kind of looks like F-Zero. And I'm thinking, like, well, why aren't you making F-Zero? The whole excuse that you didn't make F-Zero was initially what they said, and I didn't really buy it, was that the control scheme on the Wii U didn't work. And that was the official statement they made. But now I'm like, you don't have that problem. You should be touting that thing from the rooftops. Get on Mount Fuji with a bullhorn and say, like, F-Zero's coming to the Switch, you know? And, you know, Metroid or anything, even if it's just in the works or early, they should be doing that. That's what creates real momentum for their system, because that's the appeal of them. But they're not doing that. So that's what I'm worried about when they say they have momentum to carry into the holidays. I don't believe they do, not unless they have titles that people look forward to. Now, there's Mario Odyssey, right? But that's far off, and that's between Splatoon, and that is a gap. And honestly, I think when Splatoon owners and people want to, I mean, Splatoon players, the guys who really want that game, they'll buy it in the first month, in the first 30 days, they'll buy it, and they will have its sales. And then after that, there's just this lull to Mario. And then if they don't continue to either promote it or have something after Splatoon to carry it and then announce titles for early 2018 and mid and then next 2018 and announce the holiday games now, I don't think it has the momentum to carry to the sales success. And I did say when I read the financial report that I disagreed that they were going to make 10 million additional sales from that point to next year. And let me, you know, one of my wild predictions that people often get mad at me for saying, but, you know, here's an article I read today, and here's Kimishima, who was talked to the Nikkei Press a few days ago, and he said that the company cannot readily achieve the expected 10 million Switch consoles sold in this fiscal year. So, guys, when I say this stuff, I'm not just talking out of my ass. I really look at things and try to look at everything and make predictions. I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer.
That article does also say that it doesn't say whether it's out of demand or whether they just can't fulfill the supply.
Well, he doesn't specify what it is, but he is walking back the 10 million number. Now, I don't know what it is, and I can't say, because he doesn't say. But the fact that he's walking it back already means that they don't plan to meet that number, which is what I said when I read the financial report.
And that's possible, just because Nintendo has this chronic issue that's really unfortunate of meeting demand. It just is an undercutting supply because, well, the Wii U, and that's a good excuse, but it also means that it kind of sucks for anyone wanting to buy a Switch. But in terms of momentum for the system, I kind of really disagree, because it's just over 2 months into the system's life cycle, and we have two big AAA games that are really good. Yes, one's a port, but the other one is a huge Zelda game that has gotten a lot of buzz. And until Odyssey comes out, Splatoon 2 is another big one, because Splatoon got a lot of attention and was very popular. And a lot of people, not me personally, I'm not actually big on it, but ARMS is coming out too. And surprising for a Nintendo system, we're seeing a lot of indie games come out that are really compelling. Ultra Street Fighter, Thumper, I'm just looking at upcoming stuff right now. Sonic Mania, Shakedown Hawaii, like, we're seeing some cool stuff. And I know I've been sinking a lot of hours into Binding of Isaac. But all of that, I think, means that at the very least, compared to how the Wii U and its horrible launch window of just drought of games besides Nintendo Land that just weren't really worth it, the Switch does not have that problem. There is interest, and there are games that are appealing, and they're steadily coming out over the next, till the end of the year.
To be fair, the Wii U launched with 23 AAA titles, most of them third party.
Also Nintendo realizing, hey, I don't think Nintendo fans are that interested in cross platform.
Right, but the problem that
and the AAA title, actually the Mario Kart 8 Deluxe problem of being ports of old games, like Arkham City Armored Edition.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that was one of them, and they had Mass Effect, they had Assassin's Creed, they had Black Ops 2. And a bunch of other stuff. I don't have the list in front of me, but they launched with 23 games, which is a lot, and it didn't give them really any momentum. That's not the case now. But I'm saying then that what it led to was an exodus of third-party support from the system. Like in 2013, everybody was basically tapping out. I mean, EA was basically pretty rude and just said, like, we're done, and Activision bailed out, but they had their flowery, statement, like, oh, we still support Nintendo, even though they were not making any more games. Ubisoft pulled out. So that kind of thinking has rolled in to where now, before the Switch launch, EA said that it has to look viable in the market. And, of course, it does. They're looking for market share. So before they spend the soft dollars to make ports of other stuff that people may want, that the system has to prove itself. So it proves itself, yes, opening the door to indies is good, but indies are not usually like multi-million sellers and things that move systems. Zelda is, but not Binding of Isaac. And I showed on the show, Binding of Isaac has only sold about 50 to 60,000 copies worldwide. As of mid-April, I don't have
retail or including digital.
That included everything, but that was the last reported thing in April. I can't find current numbers, but Binding of Isaac overall as a multiplat hasn't sold that well. I mean, it's no Mario Kart, it's no Zelda, it's no anything. You know, it's an indie game, and the thing is, like, I feel that those will. You know, they may pile up or they may not, but I don't feel that even one or two of them, like I've seen people promoting Shantae Half-Genie Hero, which again is a port of an older game, and many people have probably played it. And if the Switch is your second system, and probably likely that you have it on your first system and you may or may not rebuy it, I don't know. But these things are not going to really sell systems, what is going to sell systems is Mario Odyssey and whatever they bring after that, that is key to what people want. You know, I mean, they should do a do-over with Star Fox and not lock it to motion controls. They should do, a Metroid game. People have been asking for Metroid for years. I mean, Other M was not the game anyone wanted, and it certainly, flubbed on that one. So
Retro Studios is gearing up to announce two games, and hopefully they aren't Donkey Kong games. That'd be good.
Well, yeah, I'd
love to see a GameCube virtual console. The baffling thing is that Nintendo hasn't said anything about any virtual console. I've been saying, give us GameCube. Just upscale. You don't need to do anything with the textures. Just render in 720, 1080, whatever. I just want to play like Eternal Darkness and Melee. And eventually, hopefully, Nintendo doesn't do the baffling thing of not doing it, and they finally crack open that can and basically just pour money in, because that's great on the system. And if anything, the Wii U showed us, yeah, the big AAA titles don't really have a place on Nintendo systems because, well, they're going to be people who don't really have the same taste or for whom the Switch is a second system to them. And that's where the indie strategy is actually really kind of working. Like, you don't need nearly as much resources to develop these indie games or to put in the portables. And in a lot of these cases, I know it was for me with Binding of Isaac, and it's even after I played it on the Vita, the ability to have these games like that, Shovel Knight, and to play it on a nice big screen that's still portable, the portability, that's a great thing to have. And for just a big bucket of third-party indie games, no one of them is going to be a system seller, but you have a whole lot of nickel and dime games that are going to be like, oh, what's out this week? Oh, this is $10-$15. I'm going to dump that in right now because I'm big on that. I can play this game I liked before portably. That's awesome. And that, along with the big Nintendo games that are coming out, and again, Splatoon 2, that's going to be pretty big. ARMS has a decent amount of groundswell. I'm curious to see how well that goes. And, you know, they haven't announced new stuff yet because Nintendo has been focusing a lot on just 2017 releases. They even said at E3, they're only going to be doing 2017. That's calculated. It is so they have the short-term attention for games coming out through the holiday season. We have no idea what they have planned for 2018. If they've planned something, well, then we're going to see some stuff, but they're just not going to announce it just yet. But they're probably working on some more stuff that are big names that people are waiting for. Maybe not F-Zero. I would love to see Metroid. I wouldn't hold my breath for either, but it'd be good. We're going to be seeing stuff. Even the long-rumored Pokemon Stars, whether that's for the 2DS, the new 2DS XL, or the Switch. You know, we'll see.
Yeah, well, I mean, they constantly say they have news and stuff, and nine times out of 10, they really drop the ball or disappoint with that one. So I'll tell you a story with the E3 where we met, and I was with Anthony Nash, and we had seen the Zelda video, whatever, and Nintendo was going to hold their little press conference to talk about a game. So everybody was clamoring, oh, it's just going to be Metroid, it's going to be Star Fox, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I kind of was hoping it was Star Fox or something like that, but I didn't think so. We didn't have invites, so I contacted someone I knew in Corpcom, and they got us in. So, you know, and I was with Nash, and he was super excited, you know, thought we were going to see some, like, awesome shit, and I was like, lower your expectations, man. I don't think this is going to be what you think it is and what a lot of people think it is. And then we sat down, and, you know, they came out, the guys from Intelligent Systems came out, and people were like, oh, Fire Emblem or Advance Wars or something, you know. And then they showed Codename Steam. And I literally saw the entirety of IGN Europe get up and leave. So when I, you know, and it's not, so, but I, you know, Codename Steam, it is what it is, but it wasn't, everybody had super expectations going into that room. And I swear when they started talking about that, and these guys, I saw these guys just like fucking bail, you know, they'd even stay. So when Nintendo says they have stuff to show, I always just say, wait and see what it is. And don't hold, you know, super expectations until they announce it and they show you what it is. So, and you know, I've seen that happen time and time again. So with my expectations for them and what they've done in the past with Virtual Console, again, like you said, what they should do is exactly what you said. It's like open up the GameCube library, publish all those things again on the Switch, and I guarantee they would sell well, and they need to open it. They don't trickle them out like you're turning on the faucet a little bit and drip it out. Just turn it on, you know, and get all those licenses. And I've said that they multiple times they should do that. But they in the past, they haven't done that, and I'm afraid they're going to go back to that strategy. And I don't have any indication that they're going to change it. You know, releasing 2 to 3 games a month, trickling out titles, not getting licenses that people really want. You know, like you said, Eternal Darkness. I don't remember if they published that or not.
They didn't.
Yeah. So
I think it was Silicon Knights.
And it would be a huge It would be a huge swing and a miss for them not to get that license. You know, when I had Virtual Console on the Wii.
Actually, no, Nintendo did publish it. Sorry, I was wrong.
Oh, okay, then they can get it. But there's other stuff that people might want. I don't remember the name of that Geist or whatever. No, was that on GameCube? Maybe that was on Wii. And then there was the one with the chick dancing. I don't know. She was shaking her butt and she'd shoot things. I don't know. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Channel 5?
No. That's the dancing one. That's the rhythm one. This one was darker. I don't know. But it was definitely on GameCube. Anyway, I agree with you on that point, but I don't have any indication that they will open up the floodgates of everyone's hopes and desires and pour it all out for E3. That's what I'm really worried about.
We don't think they will. I mean, I'm not betting any money on Nintendo doing something particularly smart, but they have learned to be really tight-lipped, and that's why they've been doing this. We're only going to talk about 2017 for now. They've been keeping this stuff close to the vest because they learned over the debacle that was the Wii U, maybe they shouldn't be making, you know, Square Enix-level promises years out. And that's kind of working for them so far. It is infuriating, but at least it means that they aren't showing everyone that they're doing something really stupid far off. When the Wii U first came out, I remember the E3 before they announced it, I went to this preview event where they showed basically like prototypes and some tech demos, and no one in the room, none of the tech journalists, none of the people showing off the hardware could say, is this going to be a new system or is this going to be an accessory? And I think Nintendo learned their lesson of maybe we're not going to announce stuff until we have it pretty close to coming out. And maybe that'll lead to a Switch. Maybe it'll lead to, you know, no one getting an NES Classic. I have no confidence that they're going to let all the GameCube stuff dump out. I have no confidence they're even going to put out a virtual console. That is not certain. And it would be a Nintendo move for them to just not do it and leave that money on the table. I know what I'd like to see. But the thing is, we have no idea what they're going to do or if it'll be stupid. Nintendo has this weird, weird habit of doing a few things that are completely brilliant and making tons of money and then screwing up hardcore in the most stupid ways possible.
Yeah, I mean, every E3 when I was there, I'd have to work on the site, and that was a lot of late nights. But we'd have to watch the conference, right? So I remember that year when they showed the Wii U in 2011, and we're all gathered and we watched it. And Reggie comes out, whatever, and they're only showing the gamepad. And I got up and I went over to the head of Corpcom, because she was in our office. And I said, why isn't he showing the console? He's only talking about the gamepad. And that literally is like, no, our messaging is all around the gamepad. The console isn't important. I said, that's a huge mistake. And sure enough, that is what happened. Like, I couldn't believe they were doing that. Like, you don't show people like this, they're going to think it's a tablet. And you know, that's what happened. That marketing confusion went on. A guy got fired from sales. And he was our liaison with Target because they kept printing images of the gamepad next to the original Wii. And he lost his job over that, which I feel bad, but
it's unfortunate. There are two things you should never bet on with Nintendo. It is for them to do something smart or for them to fail, because those are two things that they probably won't ever really do. But when they do, they'll do it hard in either direction. The decision-making process is so bizarre from the outside and baffling and sort of old, weird, traditional Japanese toy company. We have no idea if they're going to botch things hard or come out with the biggest thing ever. And I don't know if the Switch is going to be either of those, but right now it is selling really well. And so far it has really compelling games for the short amount of time it's been on the shelves.
Yeah, I mean, we have to look at long-term, but... If they do even half of what you said, then their fortunes could change and they could continue to have, you know, some success. I don't know at what level, you know, considering like most people, other people that are far more ravenous and less intelligent than you come at me and say that there exists, you know, Nintendo's not competing with anybody and whatever. And I'm like, that is insane to say. Like, they make video games. Other people make video games. They're in the video game industry. Like, you know, I know they make Amiibos and all this stuff, but they, you know, the Switch is sitting in a pool with the Xbox and PlayStation. So they have to look at, you know, there's a market and there's a market share. And if you want a piece of that market share, you have to make something compelling so that people who, you know, are going to buy something, buy your hardware and maybe not the other guy's hardware. So, you know, So sit there and you know, and I'm not saying you, not at all. Like other people have argued this with me on multiple fronts. Like, you know, they're in a bigger market. So, you know, I don't know what Microsoft's going to say at E3 either, but what they're going to say is going to affect where people start looking and paying attention to, right? Nintendo has, as you know, pretty core fans, and they'll just pay attention to what they do, but to get everyone else, because remember, they're still running Blue Ocean, and I never agreed with Blue Ocean, but they're still running it. So, but just in a different way, you know, not going after grandma anymore. They have to also entice the people who are watching and looking at E3. Like, regular people are not watching that, but everyone else in there. And Microsoft must think they have something damn good to present because they're going first. Right, they moved up their thing to Sunday.
Yeah, yes.
Right, you're right. So everyone trying to arrive, but I don't think you do that unless you think you nailed it, right?
Yeah, just doesn't mean that they did, because they can still screw up hard too.
Right, I don't know what they got. Like, you know, first of all, they have to come out with games, and that's what we've been saying over and over again. I mean, the Scorpio could be able to, you know, cure cancer in 15 seconds. It could be a quantum computer if you can't play anything on it. If you don't have new games, like, it's worthless. So I, you know, I'm thinking like a good part of that presentation better be new games or what people have been asking for, you know. And they already said Halo 6 is not going to be there. They didn't Microsoft say a Halo would be there.
Halo Wars 2 just came out. Look, anyone cares? Microsoft is in a weirder problem than Nintendo is too, because they're not talking about competing between their system and their handheld. They're talking about competing between their system and Windows. And they've been pushing Windows 10 as this gaming platform. They've been making Xbox as a brand, as an app, something that extends to Windows 10. And that's where they're going to be hitting a wall, I think, with the Scorpio, not saying, okay, should I get this instead of a PS4? Should I get this instead of a 3DS? But should I play on this instead of my PC? And they've blurred the line so much, they're blurring it even further. I have no idea what Scorpio is going to be, but they're going to have to pull out some surprises unless they just make a really compelling case. Like, we're going to have to see what they announce.
Yeah, I'll just jump in here real quick. We don't want to talk about Scorpio, but Will, I just based off what you said, I may want to invite you to our pre-E3 show, because you kind of hit it on the head when it comes to Scorpio right there, man. Okay, so we're coming up about an hour. Here's what I find funny about this whole conversation, right? You guys go on Twitter, go crazy for hours, right? And in 20 minutes into this podcast, you both agreed. It was hilarious. Like, you agreed to disagree on some things, you agreed on something. So that's what I'm saying. Social media could be very, very bad. If we just talk to each other, we'll be all right.
The problem, yep. I fall into this trap, the problem with text, email, social media, tweets, whatever it is that it has no context, it has no tone, has no voice. Something could be interpreted as cold or as harsh, as flirty or whatever, you know? That's the problem with it. Like, you need to have frank, honest conversations, or else things can get out of hand.
Yeah, so I'm just glad both of you were able to, you know, come to an accord, because I'm like, both of you guys are two of the most kind of logical people I know, so it's just a little weird that you couldn't see eye to eye on some things, but I'm glad you, you know, agree on some things and, you know, agree to disagree on some others. But just before we wrap up, Will, once again, I want to thank you, man. I hope you had a good time here on Throwdown. You know, we're welcoming and all that, you know.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, and please just, you know, let the people know where they can find you and, you know, just plug some of your stuff.
Sure. I'm AgriWill on Twitter. You can read some of my stuff on geek.com, and other of my stuff you can read on PCMag.com. Just, you know, depends on the tone. Go to either site.
Awesome, man. All right. Thank you for joining us. We had a lot of people watching us live, which pretty much the same amount as we normally do on Throwdown, which is pretty good. You know, hope you guys enjoy that. So,
I'm surprised on a Saturday.
On a Saturday, exactly. All right. So let's wrap this up. So thank you for watching and listening. Subscribe to Throwdown on SoundCloud, iTunes, and YouTube. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Throwdown Show. Links are located in the description below. Once again, I was joined by Chris Seeley.
Yeah, I'll say again, you know, I'll apologize for, you know, what my attitude on Twitter, and I did take things too far, and well, I apologize.
I appreciate that, and, you know, sorry if I got insulting as well.
Yeah, and of course, Mr. Will Greenwald.
Yep.
All right, people, see you next time. Later.